Spoiler show. Supplemental. We were circumnavigating the Procyon system when we received an urgent distress call from Turner Station. We were instructed to report there immediately for dinner and a conversation. Matt Bowes was unable to attend as he was at a tribal wedding ceremony in the Sirius system, where he was buck naked and touching himself and other alien creatures in their no-no areas. Hi. Welcome to another edition of the Spoiler Show Supplemental. This time starring me, Marcus Cunningham.
And me, Jeffrey Turner.
That's right. Today, my co-host is none other than Old Man Japan, the oldest person I know, Jeff Turner.
I'm older than your dad?
You're older than everyone ever.
Not that old.
No, you're not. Yes, I've come over to Turner Station, home of the Turner clan.
My 1,400-square-foot house.
Your 14,000-square-foot space station.
Yes.
Your 14,000-square-foot space station.
Infested with...
with fully autonomous cat bot.
My cat is... what is he? Okay, what would you describe my cat's behavior right now?
Okay, so what's going on is Jeff's cat, variously named Kotaro, Captain Stoopies, Lieutenant Stoopies,
and now
Sergeant Stoopies.
We're going to have to bang him down. He's no longer an officer, so...
There was a bit of an incident earlier tonight with Lieutenant Stoopies, and he's been demoted. And now he is Sergeant Stoopies. And for those of you who might know something about the ranking system in... is it the Navy?
Those are Army ranks.
Okay, yeah, Army. Army people, if you exist. If any fans of the Spoiler Show know anything about the Army, could you advise us on how exactly one goes about demoting a lieutenant? Where does that demotion go to?
I would imagine you can't demote them down to, like, a non-officer rank, because...
I don't know anything.
Like, a sergeant is highly skilled at his job and has been doing it for a minimum of, you know, 6, 7, 10 years, whatever.
Unless the job of a sergeant requires ball scar licking.
Yeah.
And, like, creepily rubbing up on cushions on the couch with its paws for like 30 minutes at a time.
I don't think
Lieutenant Stoopies is qualified to be a sergeant.
When he's kneading his paws into that we have this cushion with like fur on it.
Why do cats always do that?
Fuck, I don't know. I think he's literally looking for its vagina because he wants to fuck it.
Yeah.
I think he's a domestic cat, so for one, he doesn't, and you know, he doesn't have testicles, so he doesn't understand his own sexuality at all, but he knows he wants to fuck stuff that's furry. Yeah. So he hops up on the cushion and starts kneading the shit out of it with his paws.
Do you think in the wild, does the kneading perhaps cause the female cat to become receptive to copulation?
I think all cat copulation is partially rape.
Oh, like, yeah. Yeah.
Because
there's a great Louis C.K. joke about that.
Oh, is there?
It's fantastic. it's a supplemental joke to his most recent hour-long special.
I haven't listened to any of Louis C.K.'s stuff.
Oh, Jeff. You should. Everyone should.
There are like 100 different things I'm supposed to listen to or watch or read, and I don't have time for any of them.
So. Louis C.K. is one of the best stand-up comedians. Oh. Of all time,
I've seen some of his stand up stuff, and he's hilarious. Like he's got it. I saw one about he was talking about jerking off, and it was pretty funny.
Yeah, he's the amazing thing about Louis C.K., which has been often commented on every comedy podcast I listen to. So I'll try and be brief. But the amazing thing about Louis C.K., for those of you who aren't familiar with him, is that there are many comedians who use the same material for years. Like they'll come up with some great joke and they'll stick with it for like 5 or 10 years. Like,
so they'll just like keep recycling the same bits over and over and over.
Yeah, recycle the same bits over and over again. And the amazing thing about Louis C.K. is every year he throws out all of his material and starts from scratch.
That's a tremendous amount of work. I'm not a comedian, but it's like
an amazing amount of work.
Any person builds a couple bits into their repertoire for the next time they're at a party, you know? Mm. So
it's something,
you know, like I've got, you know, a couple funny jokes that I, you know, share with new people because I want to make a good impression and I want them to think I'm funny or whatever. Mm-hmm. But 10, 15 minutes? No. Or even an hour.
This is an hour.
That's right.
He constructs.
So but a lot of stand-up guys just get up there for, you know, a few minutes and they're done, right?
At first it's just like, okay, can we do 15 minutes or something?
Yeah.
But Louis C.K. constructs an hour of new comedy, like brand new comedy, every single year and puts it out. And so you can just imagine how that material goes. Like the first time, you know, it's easy to come up with an hour. And maybe even the second time or the third time. But this has been like many years of coming up with new material every single year. And so it forces him to just be so fresh and creative, which is really cool.
I really don't know how he could do it. Because that's so hard to think of funny things.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure one of our,
perennial
guests, Craig Sherburn, could tell us all about.
Yeah, Craig Sherburn. I love that guy.
Yeah. He's a great guy.
I don't even know him. Love him anyway.
Very interesting fellow. but yeah, it's pretty amazing. How do we even end up talking about Louis C.K.? Oh yeah, cat rape. Oh yeah.
Cat rape.
Animal sex is like rape. There's a great outtake from Louis C.K.'s Beacon, Live at the Beacon Theater Hour, which is from last year, I believe, where he talks about animal sex being rape all the time, and it's super funny. So I recommend you check that out on YouTube.
Well, I know. I'm going to check that out.
Yeah. What is that? Does anyone know anything about cats? Why do they do that weird, needy thing with their paws? Because it's just creepy. When I've had cats sit on my lap and do that with their paws.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. My cat does that. Yeah. And I'm always like, you're not going to find a vagina there, so stop looking.
You see, it makes me feel like a piece of meat. Like, I feel like the cat wants to eat me.
See, this is the thing.
I don't get warm, fuzzy feelings from cats very often.
As long as you understand that your cat doesn't care about you, then you can start to feel affection toward them. Because it's like...
I think it has more to do with the toxoplasma.
No, it's not nothing. I looked that up, by the way. You jerk.
I think once your brain is full of toxoplasma...
No, but it's not, though.
Isn't it?
Probably not. I could go get tested.
You should.
You want me to go get tested for toxoplasmosis?
Toxoplasmosis.
Yeah, I'll go get tested for that, and I'll deliver the results to you. And then we'll talk about how I don't have parasitic cysts all over my body. How's that?
Okay, but I'm pretty sure you do.
But even if I did have it, you know, there's no cure for that, right?
Yeah, I know.
So it'd be like, neato, I have it. And then it would explain why I don't dress very well and why I fucking walk out into traffic all the time, right?
my lack of inhibition finally has a source.
That's right.
Cool.
But I'm totally...
Whatever. Whatever.
I don't know. But...
Yeah, no, cats just freak me out because they... Like
they're fucking. I don't know what no he's loyalty fucking to thinking. Like I think he literally thinks I'm just a giant skin bag thing that makes him feel comfort from time to time, and that's it.
Do you think that's even true?
Do you think you can make him feel comfort? Well, I don't fucking know, man. He seems like now that he's done like humping the furry cushion, now he's just licking himself, and I would say that's probably he feels pleasure right now.
I think
Like a post-coital grooming, I guess?
I feel like the life of a cat is almost completely independent of the life of its owner.
I think so. I don't think they... Yeah.
Like, you intersect, like, ships passing in the night.
I don't think it's like that. I think
purely based on
you never intersect. It's like you're... It's like being the wife of, like, a crazy alcoholic. Like, he just keeps beating the shit out of you, and he's drunk, and he doesn't really give a shit about anything except... some pleasure.
All you know is that your job is to make sure that dinner is ready.
Make sure dinner's ready. And also, like, you know, you beg and you plead for him to just love you and stop being such a jerk.
And then he digs his claws into your arm.
He's totally incapable of that emotion and is only capable of, like, chasing after his own wants and lusts, which are, like in an alcoholic husband's case, are like violence and alcohol.
But and in the case of a neutered cat, it's this abstract, odd feeling.
Yeah, it's rub your tentacle things on me, skin bag. Hurry up with it now.
Yeah. This is just the bizarre feline ennui of a neutered domestic cat.
I did read a while ago on the BBC. I think it was the BBC. It was a credible news... source
Oh, okay.
That when your cat brings you, like, a dead animal, mm-hmm. We always perceive, oh, he's a gift. Look at how much he loves me. He's mm-hmm. just brought, you know, and again, back to the, like, alcoholic, you know, the wife of the alcoholic, you know, oh, look at yeah. that. He totally oh, loves me. It's like, yeah. no. Apparently, when you're a cat and you bring your human skin bag tentacle beast a gift, like a yeah. dead, a anything. Dead anything, what's going on in your little cat brain is that you have a giant, stupid kitten on your hands that can't hunt for shit, and you have to show him how. Here, look, giant, stupid
kitten. Does the cat not understand who feeds it every single day?
But that's just, they don't get it, right? Like, they don't care.
It's like, the cat has finally caught their first thing ever, and they come to you like, hey, stupid.
They're like an angry hipster.
I'll feed you, idiot.
It's like a hipster with a vintage 1970s Yes album.
This is the raw food I've been looking for.
Fuck.
I told you I'm on a raw diet. Stop feeding me that shit.
I think my cat is completely unaware of my existence.
Unless it's hungry.
But then it's just like, I'm just a giant dispenser. It's no more than me, like, opening up the fridge. He just knows he has to make a couple noises. Hurry the fuck up, giant fridge.
Cats are
tentacle
weird.
Hand thing. Like weird, and, yeah,
weird furry sociopaths.
Yes.
I don't understand yes. why anyone would live with one.
I was forced into it by my children.
You should have gotten a dog.
I wanted to, but they're too much work because I have three children. So.
Yeah.
It's like having four children. I already have three. Three's plenty.
Yeah.
I don't need a fourth.
I experienced the insanity of a night at the Turner House.
Oh, I know. And what poor Marcus may or may not understand is that tonight's a good night.
Normally they're even more crazy.
Oh, there's more screaming. And usually somebody will cry a couple times.
Oh, so
the wild accusations will fly.
The insane energy was directed in a slightly more positive fashion.
Yeah. Everybody was...
Because... It was
well, somebody
going upside down, monkey night.
That's right, because there was a guest, so everybody was pretty happy and like, yay, somebody's here, this is fun. Usually it's just like boring old mom and dad, you know.
Let's get in a fight.
Let's smash some things and color on the walls.
Indeed. So today, this is by way of introduction, today we've gathered to ponder one of life's biggest... most interesting questions, I think, which is just the general idea of human civilization. I think it's interesting to just ruminate on.
Absolutely. I took an anthropology class a long time ago, and it was ridiculously interesting. It was one of the few classes where I never had to make myself study. I just kind of read the book anyway, because it was neat.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's something natural about humans having... immense curiosity about our origins as people and as a species and as societies or civilizations. I think that there's an immense amount of just natural curiosity about that. Just because of the way our brains work. I think we're very interested in creating histories.
Well, why and what if are two questions that we really ask all the time that other species don't ask. Right. And that's what separates us from the other animals, more or less. And naturally, we're going to apply our little why and what if model to our own origin. Where did we come from? Because, you know,
why
chimpanzee certainly doesn't give a shit where he comes from. He's, you know, he's looking for a banana.
That's true. It's not actually true. I think most chimpanzees don't eat bananas in the wild. I'll throw that out there.
I didn't mean that. Literally,
but I mean, I agree.
He's just going about like organism stuff in the regular way, whereas we're actually sitting around going, you know what, man? I don't know where we're from.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
or, let's go find out. Whereas animals don't give a shit about that.
It's true. There is no chimpanzee equivalent to Duncan Trussell. Man, what if we're all just like inside a computer on the back of a turtle that's high on mushrooms?
And then what's the turtle on? It's just on another turtle, man.
It's turtles all the way down, bro. It's turtles all the way down, dude.
Duncan Trussell is a modern philosopher.
It's true. You know what? I was actually thinking about this a few weeks ago. Because, I mean, I don't think we have philosophers as such. We don't have people who, like, oh, yeah, I'm a philosopher for a living, you know?
I don't know.
Actually, that's not entirely true. There are definitely some people who I would say, who I would consider to be philosophers.
I've just never taken
Slavoj Žižek.
I don't know who that is.
It's this very interesting guy who wrote a book called First as Tragedy, Then as Farce. And it's basically about... one of the things that it touches on is essentially how charity, like the institutionalized idea of private charity actually does the opposite of what you want to do, or of what you want it to do in the long term, which is
it creates dependence instead of independence, right?
Well, yeah. So his argument is that charity, on the part of big corporations, for instance, Starbucks selling fair trade coffee, does as much good for the environment or as much good for the cause of those poor cocoa bean,
poor third world farmers who are making 5 cents a day, or whatever, exactly. Ridiculously low.
It does the same thing for the cause of those poor cocoa bean farmers as the kind slave masters did for the cause of emancipation.
Oh yeah, exactly.
In the 1800s.
Yeah. There's nothing fair about it because they don't play by our, like, the playing field isn't level, right? Again,
well, what I think the general argument is that if there are conditions in place that are creating suffering, if you just treat the symptoms of that suffering, i.e. Starbucks sends a kickback to these starving poor farmers in Colombia, then you never actually get around to fixing the root of the problem. And so while Starbucks might do something to help these poor farmers,
but what's the root of the problem,
rest of
then?
The rest of the people who are receiving coffee beans from these people aren't going to do anything. And so, the conditions for suffering are still in place, even if sometimes that suffering is abrogated by, you know, the generosity of certain individuals.
Yeah, but that's not how you create, like, that's what I meant before when I said dependence or independence. Like, these people can't harvest, market, and sell their own product. You know, Starbucks has them, Starbucks or whatever company is selling to Starbucks has them by the short and curlies, and there's no way that any of them could ever get enough capital to start his own business by his own field, right?
Yeah, exactly. So that's the root of the problem.
It's completely dependent. There's no independence on the part of the people who are actually doing the work.
Exactly.
You know what's crazy, and kind of illustrates this model to some degree, a little degree anyway, is, like, for example, let's say you want to buy a cool drawing.
Yeah.
And it's a print on the internet, and it's going to cost you $30.
Yeah.
And it's made by a publisher.
Sure.
The publisher gets a cut, the printer gets a cut, the retailer gets a cut, the shipper gets a cut, the artist gets a tiny little cut, too.
Yeah.
But the artist is just one of those little guys in there who's getting it, just like this bean farmer.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, whoever's, you know, financing the initial business venture itself is the one who's going to be getting all the money, right?
Yeah, they're going to get the lion's share.
Sure, and that's the same model that works for all the third world bullshit that's going on these days where, you know, companies make megabucks. The people who live in the countries where the company started don't even have jobs at all.
Yeah. Well, and it's...
and then there's, you know, and there's some shitty working class third world group out there that's getting paid fuck all because otherwise they can starve.
Right? Well, and that's part of the... that's part of the argument, right? You know, the part of the reason why corporations have found third world countries to be so easy to set up extremely low cost production is because even getting paid 5 cents a day beats the hell out of getting paid 0 cents a day.
That's right.
Right. And so if you're having this massive improvement in your quality of life relative to what it was before, then it's easy to overlook the fact that, well, okay, so the work that I'm doing is really dangerous, or the work that I'm doing is so repetitive that it's going to quickly lead my joints to lock up well before I'm, you know, out of my working age. So there's all these different factors in place you know, all these conditions that are extremely negative that get overlooked because, in a very kind of proximal way, these corporations are doing good to the people who are in the end, in this kind of ultimate, in a more ultimate way, actually suffering at their hands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I totally, anyways, totally agree. It's, but anyway, this will relate to my sell me on it later, because yeah. I'm actually going to sell you on something that I'm going to say it, but I'm just going to say that it cuts out the giant douchey corporation.
Mm, interesting.
And draws a straight line from producer to consumer.
Interesting. But yeah, like, to get back to our thing about philosophers, you know, we don't have, you know, like, it seems like in the French Revolution, like in the Enlightenment, there were philosophers. There were people who lived to kind of philosophize. And
but okay, you have to remember, for one, that the philosophers of that era were all members of the aristocracy, which meant that none of them lived on the farm. There could have been plenty of geniuses out there who lived and died on the friggin' farm and never got discovered because
now,
fuck them, right?
Now follow this idea through with me.
Sure.
So back in the, you know, 16, 1700s, these philosophers are members of the aristocracy. Nowadays, we don't have philosophers per se, but we do have, like, celebrities or pseudo-celebrities.
Well, were celebrities back then as well, of course, right?
But yeah, but and just like back then, not everyone who you can listen to actually has something to say. But
none of them have anything to say, really.
Well, it's interesting listening to, like, a lot of podcasts that I've listened to have had, you know, incredibly interesting people just coming on to talk about things, talking about their point of view. And Duncan Trussell, I think, is a modern day philosopher.
See, I've got and
as weird as his ideas are.
You think he's what modern philosophy has come down to?
In some ways, yeah.
In some ways, just kind of like rapping about wacky ideas, really.
Yeah, I think what made philosophy revolutionary was the willingness of those philosophers back in that kind of golden age of thinkers. What made philosophers so great was their willingness to completely step outside the bounds of kind of earthly possibilities, of limits, and actually think about things in a completely new or abstract way. And so even though a lot of the shit that Duncan Trussell says on the Joe Rogan Experience
is really inane and is kind of just garbageous,
insane, silly stuff. There's also a certain amount of kind of weird wisdom. And so it's
but if it's just okay, my 4-year-old has just popped over here. Let's see what he has to say.
Hello, Cubot.
I think that you're probably smarter than Duncan Trussell. How do you feel about that? Do you feel good or bad?
Do you want to know who Duncan Trussell is?
Bad.
You feel bad?
You feel bad?
Do you want Duncan Trussell to be smarter than you?
I like Duncan Trussell, but I don't think he's very smart.
I
certainly don't think he's a philosopher, Marcus.
Maybe really I just have the wool pulled over my eyes. Maybe I'm too scientific, so I'm just unwilling to.
Okay, if I were to ask Duncan Trussell what the universe is made out of, he'd be like, wow, just stuff, man.
Wow, man.
QB, what is the universe made out of?
I don't know.
See, that's the right answer. Because he's 4 and he doesn't know, whereas Duncan Trussell doesn't know, but he just goes off on some crazy tangent.
Yeah, but I like that. I like that willingness to just kind of...
To tell you the truth, Duncan Trussell, like, I used to like listening to the Joe Rogan Experience quite a bit, but frankly, because of Duncan Trussell, I didn't want to listen to it anymore because I got sick of his nonsense.
Really?
I loved it when they got, like, what's that Italian fella?
Steve Rinella?
No, Daniela. Crap, he wrote a book.
Daniel Bolelli?
Yeah, Daniele Bolelli.
Yeah.
But Daniela? Well, yeah, it's a guy, but it's
Daniele,
yeah. Yeah.
What's his, what was his deal again?
I can't remember exactly right now, but he
I'm
was
sure
cool.
I've heard it.
It had to do with the giant mound of bullshit that religion is built upon. Basically, he went around debunking Christianity most of the time. Being Italian, he probably just hated the Vatican or something.
Yeah, maybe. See, what I like about Duncan Trussell is that he has, I mean, in some senses, what I see as a very scientific view towards searching for the truth.
What if, like, your brain was just on the same frequency as my brain, man, and that's why we always, like, get along so good?
Tell me, Marcus, where's the science in that?
Daddy? Hey, there's... Daddy?
What? Do you figure out what the universe is made out
What's
of
What's the universe made out of, Q-Bot?
Candy!
Oh,
there we go. That's the Duncan... That's the Duncan Trussell answer, man.
Good job, Q.
The universe is made of candy.
I love you very much, but you're wrong.
Have a candy house.
A candy house?
Yeah.
It's a giant candy house?
Yes, a ginger house.
A giant gingerbread house.
Yes, we're putting gingers in it.
Okay. You've reached nonsense territory. Sweetie.
To bed. He started.
Back to bed. Go see mommy. Go hang out with mommy.
The excitement.
Mommy will scratch your back for you because it's so scratchy.
The excitement of Turner Station, ladies and gentlemen. Q-Bot 4000, the upgraded model.
Yeah, I just threw them together out of some spare parts I had in the basement.
Cool. You done good. He seems proportional.
Yeah. Yeah, his head's a little big, but whatever.
Yeah, his cognitive functions seem adequate.
Okay, back to civilization. Let's do that.
Yeah, let's talk civilization since we haven't at all yet, and it's been almost 30 minutes.
Okay, civilization began somewhere in the neighborhood of...
Like 12,000 years ago.
No, more like 20,000 years ago.
Well, what they say... Yeah, sorry, they say 12,000 BCE.
12,000 BCE
between,
is like...
Between 10 and 12,000 BCE.
Yeah, so it's like 14,000.
So it's 12, between 12 and 14,000 years ago.
Right.
Civilization supposedly began.
But with some excavations they have, they have found ruins that they put more in the 20,000 year range. Yeah. Or older, some.
Yeah, well, and there's a bunch of really interesting ruins. A bunch of really interesting megalithic sites that... have some evidence to suggest that they're much, much older than that.
So that's the question that everybody seems to ask themselves all the time is, where am I from, man? And if you look at us evolutionarily speaking, it's pretty easy to pin it down to, you know, Western Africa a few million years ago, giant brain Australopithecine walking around.
Yeah.
Call us Homo sapiens. And off they went to fuck the whole world up, right? So
totally. But then...
But when did they get organized manner where they stopped just, like, you know, running around with sticks, bashing stuff over the head and turning it into food, and actually built a society where one guy made the food, another guy ate the food, but he also made, you know, shoes.
You've got a class of people who are devoted to, you know, looking up at the stars and looking at the way that...
Where you can...
That these crazy, heavenly bodies in the sky move.
When can you build a society that has an aristocracy that can just sit around figuring out math for a living because they don't need to go running around for food and they don't need to water stuff and they don't need to harvest stuff?
Exactly. And so there are a whole bunch of these interesting archaeological finds, one of which is a site in Turkey that's called Göbekli Tepe.
Yeah, that's the big one that I keep hearing about from...
And basically...
Lots of people I know, actually.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about Göbekli Tepe is that it's first of all, it's a massive site. It's only been... It's I think maybe 5% of it or something has actually been excavated.
So it's really, really big. And it's all made out of, like, stone structures,
it's enormous megaliths. And part of what makes Göbekli Tepe amazing is the fact that it's this... You know, these incredibly heavy megaliths. So these are, you know, hundreds of tons.
Which means they, somewhere along the line, someone had to figure out how to put together a simple machine like a lever or a pulley to move them, right?
Yeah. The other thing is that they were quarried at the bottom of the hill that they are on the top of.
Oh, okay. So again, more simple machines, which means you have an engineer class or
some sort of engineering problem getting solved to get these massive stones. And you know what? Perhaps I'm wrong with the hundreds of tons. Assertion. I might be confusing that with a different rock in Iraq. Nevertheless, Göbekli Tepe is a megalithic stone site. And so there are these massive stones, massive megaliths that were quarried and then subsequently carried to the top of the hill, arranged in crazy shapes, the extent of which isn't even clear yet because it hasn't been fully excavated. And all of this has been dated to somewhere in the, like, I think 20 to 30,000 years BCE.
Yeah.
Sort of age. Yeah. So this is, you know, almost, you know, it's 10 or more thousand years previous to where
the original estimates at the beginning of civilization were.
Yeah.
The other thing that it kind of trumps as well is when civilization started, it was probably just glorified little village markets where, you know, agrarian groups and tribes could get together and do some trading, right?
Yeah, like farmers and markets then, or something.
But yeah, except where everybody, you know, like eventually what would have happened was it would have branched into a permanent market where somebody actually ran it. And then that person's
But even for that, you've got to have the development of an agrarian
culture. Yeah, but agrarian culture doesn't mean that you're going to have civilization necessarily. It just means you're going to have a lot of food, right?
Yeah.
Now that, when your little tribe gets big enough that you actually have to have a class of people whose job it is to organize the tribe, you know, you're not talking 20, 30, 40, 50 people anymore.
No.
You're in the hundreds, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's where a city comes in, or a town, or a village, right? So,
yeah, and so part of the problem
was that they said that the advent of the city per se, when I was studying anthropology 15 years ago, just as a first year undergrad student, which isn't really, really deep in it, but nonetheless, this is what they were teaching at university back in the late 90s, was that, the first civilizations cropped up in the Fertile Crescent about 10,000 BC.
Yeah. And
they didn't have monoliths. They didn't build huge stone structures back
then.
Well,
they did. The Sphinx.
That was like 3000 BC.
So,
which is not when civilization cropped up, which was like, you know, 10,000 BC. But so Göbekli Tepe predates all of that shit by 10,000 years and puts the meter stick way deeper.
Actually, Jeff.
What?
There have been some recent geological studies of the surface of the Sphinx.
Mm-hmm.
And what they found is that a lot of the erosion, there's a lot of vertical erosion on the Sphinx.
Yes.
And the cause of that, according to these geologists, is rainfall erosion. And the last time
that it rained in that area was
getting rained heavily on, like, I think the Sphinx gets about 1 centimeter of rain per year. So the last time the Sphinx was getting rained on sufficiently enough to actually cause it to have, you know, a significant amount of erosion to it was somewhere in the ballpark of 10,000 to as early as 30,000 years ago, which
really
would be insane.
If the Sphinx were 30,000 years old,
how fucking nuts.
Well, that basically, every single guy out there who studied anthropology could take at least a couple units out of their textbooks and rip them out and throw them in the garbage, because that changes everything.
Oh, completely.
You know?
And so here's the other part of that, like, you know, potential super ancient civilization hypothesis.
Yeah.
The other part of that is that 30,000 years ago, the sea level on the planet was significantly lower.
Well, they found what they think might be the, you know, like Atlantis, but the city that people glorified later on, which was probably what we call Atlantis, is just off the coast of Spain, down in the water, isn't it?
Yeah, there I think there are a number of places, but
the most recent one was
just off the coast of Spain, I believe. But basically, the interesting thing here is that it's easy for us to study archaeology within the last 10,000 years, relatively speaking.
Yes.
You know, like, it's not easy, but it's easier. Past 10,000 years, it's crazy how little of what we have in our current society would actually last 10,000 years.
I've done a little bit of reading about this, and if all of a sudden there were some extinction level event on Earth that killed all the humans,
mm-hmm.
And all that we're left behind were our cars and our trains and our airports and our buildings and our subterranean buildings and all the crazy feats of architecture that we've done over the last, you know, 10, 20,000, maybe even 30,000 years.
Yeah.
Basically, all of it disappears after 15,000 years or so, or less, even less than that.
Yeah.
Like, it's... The article I was reading about it cited Chernobyl and how in only 3 or 4 decades, Chernobyl's been gobbled up by a forest, essentially, right? So, obviously, there's still a lot of remnants of that city. But the estimate was that if all the humans disappeared tomorrow, if somebody were to drop by Earth 10,000 years from now and look for a civilization, they probably wouldn't find anything.
Yeah, if they did, it would be after a significant amount of searching. It wouldn't be obvious.
Now, the cool part about the article that I read, and I don't remember where I read it, was that the only evidence they would find of humans would be whatever we've left on the moon, because it's perfectly preserved up there.
That would be fucking crazy.
Wouldn't that be nuts if you're like some alien?
If your only clue
was like that, and the stuff that they've left on the moon is like literally shit. There is shit all over the moon. Because anytime they've put
feces,
human feces.
There's human feces on the moon.
Lots of it.
Because
when they're ejecting, shit into space and they're near the moon, it goes down to the moon. It goes to like whatever gravity is strongest, and that's the moon. There is literally shit on the moon, human shit on the moon. So they're gonna find
perfectly well preserved in space.
Perfectly preserved in space. I also believe there's some dead Russians up there. I don't know if that's true or not, but I did once read something saying that. The Russians sent an expedition to the moon. Problem was, crashed into the moon, killed all the Russians. But it's one of those things where it's like, is that true or not true? I don't know. I haven't found anything to support its truth.
All I was thinking was on the moon was like a fucking American flag.
And like a piece of the space, the moonlander.
Footprints. I mean, can you imagine coming from an alien civilization and trying to piece together the mystery of a couple of, like some footprints and an American flag? Like what the fuck is this thing?
No bones or anything?
Yeah, no bones.
Like, you'd look down at the planet and be like, it's a Nita, like, desert planet. Or, you know, like this multi... Not, I don't know why... See, science fiction, like, has programmed me so deeply that I always think that a planet has one feature and one feature only. That feature is desert.
Well...
You know, but anyway.
But
you'd look down and see this really cool planet where all the living conditions are right for carbon-based life that respires using oxygen, and off you go. Yeah. And then, there's no evidence of them anywhere, but their shit and some of their footprints and some wacky sign they left behind is still there. Yeah. Like, that's as long as there isn't any crater, like as long as like something doesn't impact directly into that evidence, that's going to be there for future possible aliens or even people, depending on how far, like, because we're going to colonize somewhere along the line, interplanetary. You never know if people are going to come back and be like, holy shit, is that the planet we're from?
Well, that's part of
the equivalent of what we do now with West Africa.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what's so interesting about all of these various kind of signs and signals that we've thrown out kind of just randomly into space. You know, we've got like a sign on the moon, some footprints, the footprint of the landers that landed on the moon.
Also, that the other thing that the article also dealt with was how we have all this shit orbiting around the Earth. And by then, all of it, the orbits would have decayed. They all would have burned.
Down.
That would have been the end of it. But literally, in a very, geologically speaking, a very short amount of time, humanity, any trace of us is gone. Unless you start searching through the fossil record and find some record of us.
Yeah. And so
you're not going to find shit except for literally some fucking feces, a couple scrap pieces of metal, a footprint, and a wacky ass sign.
And if you're lucky, maybe you find one of those crazy deep space probes with the golden record on it.
Oh!
And you're able to reverse engineer what a record player is. What the fuck? Why did they choose a record?
Well, it makes sense, really.
No, it doesn't.
Sure it does.
It makes about as much sense as an arrow.
What? No. It makes perfect sense. I'm assuming that aliens...
You're a chlorine-based gas being.
Okay.
Tell me how you're going to interpret the playing of a record.
Well, let's say that a chlorine-based gas being is able to detect vibration in his gaseous surroundings.
Duh.
That's called hearing.
Yeah.
What is a record?
It's a golden disc with grooves on it.
What do those grooves represent?
Nothing, as far as the chlorine-based gas being can tell.
If he is able to interpret sound, hopefully him or one of his science chlorine-based gas beast life form are able to make that little jump in cognition to say, what if these little like lines are actually representative of vibrating air, vibrating gas?
And yeah, thus, so they'll try and read it visually, maybe.
Well, maybe that's how they hear, is maybe they see sound. Or maybe they, let's say, you know what I mean? But it's there and it's interpretable. It's not
I feel like rocketing a record up into space is pretty, that's a pretty big gamble. Is there a record player in those?
I don't know. That's the thing, is we don't have a benchmark to base. Like
there's a record player with a nuclear battery on it.
Well, here's another thing. I also heard from a strategic standpoint, basically any world government out there does not want to advertise the fact that there is life here to any possible alien life forms.
Pussies.
No, and the reason why makes perfect sense, because if they're anything like us and have grown up in an environment where evolution is what makes them what they are, they're going to be like us or worse.
Yeah.
Which means they're just going to come in, butt fuck us, probably kill us all with a bunch of germs first.
Yeah.
And then just, you know, anything they think is cool about our planet, that's gone.
Yeah, they just take it, colonize it, who knows. Yeah, I don't...
And then maybe leave a bunch of their prisoners here for fun.
Yeah, I don't really have high
hopes. Because that's how we colonize shit.
I don't really have high hopes for a human-alien interaction.
That's a terrible idea.
It would be really fucking
as
crazy.
Awesome as it would be, because I'm a huge science fiction fan. On the other
awesome
hand,
as it
from
would
a realistic
be
point of view, for there terrible to be, fucking idea.
As awesome as it would be for there to be Twi'lek chicks.
With their head dicks.
With their leku, their head tails.
They're, I call them head dicks.
That's gross.
Do you still want to like date one now?
No, I don't actually. You just ruined Twi'lek for me.
Touched head dicks.
Great. Thanks, Jeff. You just ruined Twi'lek chicks for me.
That's fine.
They don't even exist and you've ruined them.
I'm sorry.
But yeah, so if everything, if like basically every trace of our human civilization could be destroyed in 15,000 years.
Right.
If there was some sort of civilization 30,000 years ago.
We would never fucking know. Those guys could have been driving around in hover cars. You know,
exactly.
High-fiving each other and, you know, talking about how awesome guitars are. And then, you know, they fuck something up. Their civilization eats shit. 20,000 years later, there's no sign of them and civilization crops up again.
Yeah.
Totally.
It's such a, I mean, it's
fucking
100% conjecture, completely silly, fanciful thinking. But it's such
up until a little while ago, if you asked anybody that question, do you think there was another civilization that exists 30,000 years ago.
They would just laugh in your face.
No, of course not. We were still like battling dominance. We were battling the Cro-Magnons back then for dominance. Or not the Cro-Magnons,
the Neanderthals. Yeah.
Cro-Magnons were battling the Neanderthals for world dominance, like a wrestling match or something. That's what they would have said back
ago. What if that was true, but it was also like more extensive than that? Like what if... You know, maybe we're capable of finding their stone tools, or maybe we're capable of finding.
But that's just it. It's like any tools we even manufacture today are made out of fucking minerals. They decay.
Yeah.
They oxidize. Off they go. You know, and they oxidize faster than any. Like you wouldn't believe. Like I've repaired. Like I work with metal for a living, and I've repaired pieces of heavy-duty mining equipment that's 30 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And after 30 years, you know, the customer will bring whatever pieces of this thing are like, these things are still working, some of them.
Yeah.
And they'll bring it in and be like, oh, so can you fix this? And we'll look at it and be like, oh, no, it's too far gone. There's too much corrosion. I can't repair it, right?
Yeah.
And this thing's only 30 years old.
Oh, yeah.
So it's, there are implements that we use to ply our trades would disappear first, really.
Yeah. And so you start getting these weird... There are a couple of weird objects, you know, like you start to look at, if you look at even some of the statues and stuff that have been dated to that period, I think it's the Aurignacian period.
No idea.
30,000 years ago.
Holy shit.
if you start to look at some of the objects that we found, you know, there's like this crazy, there's this lion-headed statue that was carved out of a woolly mammoth tusk.
That's fucking awesome.
Yeah, it's like an anthropomorphic
awesome.
Lion-headed statue carved out of a mammoth tusk. And, you know, we have no idea what it is. Like, you can't even conjecture what it might be. But then you also contrast that with some crazy shit. There's this... Search this on Google, spoiler show fans. search ancient obsidian bracelet, and you'll find a link to this crazy bracelet that they've found. They've dated it to, I think, 10 or 12,000 years ago. And it's this bracelet made of obsidian, but the edges of it are so regular that modern tools could only match it. Like, even with like a modern, you know, like machined kind of.
Well, I don't know.
Like, it's got this incredibly well-defined kind of angular.
But it's made out of obsidian? Shape
made out of obsidian.
Obsidian's essentially like kind of like glass.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
See, I work with metals and.
Obsidian, from what I understand,
like I always hear that, like, if you can machine it, blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, I'm a machinist, so yeah I can machine it. But for example, the materials I work with and the methods I use were impossible until the Industrial Revolution because nobody could temper steel hard enough to cut softer steel. And that's what it comes down to, right?
But yeah.
Obsidian and jewelry making, you know, those metals and those materials are really easy to work with. A lot of people are like, oh, we don't know if there's, like, I'm not saying that it's not true, but it's, for me, speaking as a tradesman, as a guy who works with materials in this capacity from day in, day out, is don't sell, you know, if it's steel-based, no, they couldn't do that along. Like, you know, up until 400 years ago, they didn't even make steel. The old guys back in the day, those tradesmen could do what I can do now with other materials that they did have access to, that they could cut.
It's just my understanding of the sort of working of obsidian is that it's extremely challenging because it is basically like glass.
Yeah.
To have that sort of regular, like, this is it's basically equivalent to what you would get today by cutting it with a laser.
Really?
So it's this very precisely.
But laser cutting isn't necessarily something you do for precision. Like, if you want to make something to a very, very precise diameter or size, mm-hmm. you don't use a laser to do that. You grind it. Or you use another process called lapping, which essentially is grinding light.
Yeah.
And that lapping has been something that's existed for thousands and thousands of years. That's not something that, like I learned how to lap. How to lap metals and get certain service finishes when I was apprenticing, but it literally is something that the ancients could do. They just couldn't do it with steel, but they could do it with anything else. They could polish. They get exactly whatever size they wanted as long as they had a gauge or a precise measuring instrument, which is pretty easy to make, actually. I'm just saying, don't sell those guys short.
It's true.
Because they're crazy with some of those, some of the beads and baubles that come from history and some of the things that they manufacture.
They're just incredible.
Are tits on size, like right to the kind of tolerances mm-hmm. that we still use to make things to certain sizes today.
Oh, yeah. No,
really tight tolerances.
There are a whole bunch of very, just very interesting artifacts of our, you know, ancient ancestors, and there's also a whole bunch of just massive edifices that we have no explanation for. You know, like there's this amateur Egyptologist guy named John Anthony West, who's one of the big proponents. He was recently on the Joe Rogan Experience.
Did he write a book?
Yes.
What was his book called?
He's written a number of books.
And they're all like what if aliens and had like helped the Egyptians and stuff like that?
No, that's Graham Hancock. Graham Hancock. Actually, I don't know if Graham Hancock is even so much about the aliens, which is maybe he is. John Anthony West is a little bit less of a crackpot. John Anthony West is a little bit less willing to attribute human civilization to alien intervention, which is good. That's an important trait for a person who wants to be taken seriously.
Yeah, don't start saying aliens did it until you actually have evidence that aliens did it.
You hear that? Realsies. You hear that, Giorgio Tsoukalos of Ancient Aliens? Yes. Guests of the Joe Rogan Experience.
I don't know. Joe Rogan has some real. Every now and again, he gets a great guest.
He
an anthropologist or a historian or a political activist.
Yeah, Amber Lyon. There was a great episode a few weeks ago with a journalist for CNN, a former journalist for CNN, Amber Lyon.
Oh, I haven't heard about this.
She was covering the protests in Bahrain, where they have Arab Spring style protests, but none of her work actually made it to the airwaves because Bahrain is a sponsor of CNN. And so
those sons of bitches.
So Bahrain actually pays CNN to put on like favorable programming about them.
That's crazy.
When they have a legitimate story talking about like corruption and, you know, like police, you know, like police brutality, this crazy, like the thing that's going on right now in Bahrain is that the government is systematically tear gassing its citizens. Like they're not just tear gassing when there's a riot. They just drop tear gas everywhere every day, and people are starting to have like people are starting to die.
Why are they tear gassing their citizens every day?
Because people are still protesting.
So they just, it's like, okay, those guys are protesting, so you're all going to suck some shit now.
Exactly. Yeah, that's their strategy to try and, like, you know, force people to pressure their friends and family members who are protesting.
Sounds like white people need to get in there and fix that problem.
Interesting stance.
Sorry, I'm just still really, like, amazed that Romney got so many votes, that's all. So I'm always making white people jokes. Right,
yeah,
now. You'll have to forgive me, but I'm on like a white people joke kick. So.
The post U.S. election, that it's crazy to me. I was actually talking. We have a couple of American people that work with us at the lab that I'm working in, and I was talking to one of them today, and I was like, "Dude, your country is so interesting." You replaced the word
fucked up with interesting.
Well, you have a, I guess fucked up is an equally good word here. You have two states that legalize marijuana, three states that legalize gay marriage, and still 48% of your electorate votes for Mitt Romney. Mitt
fucking Romney.
Who is like literally just the worst candidate you can imagine in so many ways. I mean, I think I have a lot more respect for the Republican Party, like the way that it was 50 years ago, than I do for the Republican Party of today. The Republican Party of today is just like insanely out of step with reality. Like if you're relying on white males to be your constituents, I'm sorry, but your days are numbered.
Well, it's not just that, but it's not relying on the white males per se. It's relying on this crazy ass culture of fear where, you know, if someone's different from you, you got to be scared of them. And it's better to, you know, point a gun at them first before it is to ask them what the fuck is going on.
Yeah.
Before, you know, and that's, you know, like I've worked with a lot of Americans in the past and I've had a really tough time getting along with them because they're so fiercely, fiercely individualistic.
Yeah.
And the Americans that I, like fiercely, like they, like if you're like, oh, I don't know, I'll just do, you know, this. And they're just like, oh, it's fuck you, you fucking un-American prick.
Oh yeah. Well,
like, I've been told off a couple times by Americans for culture. Just like letting, like, have, like, especially when I was in Japan, there were so many, like I was unionized. There were so many union disputes and I'd be like, well, just let the union handle it. And they'd be like, they're going to fight for me. And it's like, well, No. Unions are about all of us together as a group getting better working conditions. And they'd just be like, me getting better working conditions.
Yeah, there's, I think part of that is just kind of built into their society.
Yes.
You know, as a nation, their whole thing is this fierce brand of,
like, individualism. Do it
yourself,
right?
Individualism. Yeah. I mean, that's the reason that they rebelled from England. The reason that the American Constitution exists is because of this fierce, radical individualism by a small group of white dudes.
But that radical individualism has turned in from individualism into just being scared shitless and angry about everything.
Oh, it's a very warped, bizarre, like, worldview.
The individualists who decided to, you know, throw off the shackles of old Mother England those men understood exactly how the system was working. They didn't like it one bit, and they were educated as to how it worked, and it was bad. Whereas these guys have no idea what system is going on in the world, nations are interacting with each other, how global everything is becoming, and they're just, voting for some guy who said that, you know, that he likes Jesus too.
Even though it's wacky, space Jesus, weird Jesus,
but whatever. I'm just saying that guy likes Jesus, and that guy is a Muslim. So all these
crazy Republicans know is that something, something, something. I want a government small enough to drown in a bathtub.
I guess so, but I don't think they even put that much thought into it.
Well, that's like an actual quote by
by who?
It was some. I think it was some Republican senator. It's like some Tea Party aligned dude.
Oh, Jesus.
And he's like, I want a government so small I can drown it in a bathtub.
Like it's a kitten. That's what I do on a Friday night.
Okay, guy. Well, I don't think you're going to get your wish because there's a thing called, like, infrastructure.
Yeah.
Also, I don't know. Like, there are so many, like, the judiciary. Well, I don't know.
Jews? I hate those.
The Jews.
The judiciary?
The judiciary.
Yeah, it's all bullshit. You have one group of people who are like, no, you can't just, patch the system up and expect to get along. The system needs an overhaul. And then another group that's like, I love you, Jesus. Jesus will fix it for us.
Well, no, because they...
Those are the people who are just, like, blindly voting for Romney all the time. Well, it's not necessarily because their love of Jesus, but it's
no, the... They have the same desire to see the country...
Turned back.
They want it to be better.
They want it to be better through this return to some past that never existed in the first place.
They have this crazy,
like, romanticized idea of, like, 1950s America where, son, one day you'll be a man.
Well, as far as social issues and stuff are concerned.
Well, that's what it is. It's about social issues. It's not about economic issues or moral issues. It's just about social stuff. Like, how can we take our society and put it back here? Like, how can we be right? And what are we doing wrong?
That's the only difference, really, between the Democrats and Republicans. I mean, there's, part of the silliness of that third presidential debate, I don't know if you saw it, was like an hour-long agreement fest where Barack Obama would answer a question and Mitt Romney would say, yes, I agree, and then just restate everything that Barack Obama had just said.
But these guys... Because
they actually, the Democrats and Republicans, agree almost 100% on the issues that are important. Especially with regards to a lot of foreign policy, just because the Obama administration is actually fairly right-leaning. When it comes to the economy, they all want to fix the economy, and they disagree as to how to do it, partially because there are a lot of Tea Party Republicans who have no idea what they're talking about, and so they just say crazy shit like,
it's
no more, like, no tax increases ever. That's it. Never increase taxes.
Because that's too much
money.
Find
another way of making money.
Why is it? I feel terrible for people from the South. My cousin's cousin, I'm not blood related to this guy. He's gotten married last year, and his wife is from one of the southern states. Mm-hmm. And she's got the whole accent, but do you know what? She's a big old lefty, and she's smart as shit.
Yeah.
She's like, other than...
I feel sorry for people
who got this accent that, like, to us makes her sound like some ridiculous redneck hillbilly, whereas she's actually really smart, well-educated, really articulate,
to be
friendly,
fair,
and super, like, lefty.
Well, to be fair, something like 70% of the time, people with that accent are
ridiculous
conservative rednecks, or at least they vote that way.
I think that's what it comes down to with civilization, though. If you have a really great civilization, everything's thumping along pretty good, it seems to me that the two kinds of civilizations, and again, this is just my opinion, but one civilization that does really well is one that has, like, one full underclass, one full overclass, like the Romans. They got a whole slave class that does all their work, and it costs them basically nothing but Thunhausen.
Yeah.
Or you go the other way where you don't have a slave class, but there isn't really a huge aristocracy, yeah, and there isn't a huge underclass.
Both that sounds like wrong. Socialism, sir. That sounds like socialism, and that's not the American way.
I don't give a shit about what the Americans
are. The American way is everyone's in the upper class one day, maybe.
If you're lucky.
One day we'll all be in the 1%. That's why I'm voting for Mitt Romney.
You know what? One of my neighbors...
If I win the lottery, I don't want to have to pay for my capital gains tax.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah. Fuck, how did we get... We got completely off of... The topic of
civilization.
Well, of ancient, well, it's all of the whole ancient civilization.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Right.
But I like, name a really great civilization of the past that no longer exists. Like, don't say our civilization because we're
I think
empire or
the best civilization, at least the most long-standing civilization, is the Roman one.
But the Roman
city-state of Rome was, yeah, has. Has the longest standing, you know, civilization status.
But what made it so powerful that it had this like lasting power?
Well, yeah, America and Rome have a lot of incredible parallels because the strength of Rome was that it had an incredibly powerful military that it used in a completely imperialistic fashion. Which is exactly what America does. It just calls it national defense.
Well, yeah, it just names like some of their departments the opposite of what they actually mean because it's the Department of Offense. Of course, they aren't defending a fucking thing.
Yeah, no. People would actually have to be physically threatening you on your land for it to be defense.
The thing that I'm interested in with civilization in particular is looking at the past and finding which civilizations lasted really long, had, you know, didn't. Fuck things up after they did fall or after they did die out or after they did evolve into another civilization. And how can we incorporate that into the modern world and maybe just treat everybody a little more fair?
Well, I think I'm not 100% clear on the end of Egyptian civilization, but Egypt...
Didn't they just get smacked by the Greeks? The Romans came in and fucked them up. Well, Julius Caesar came in and smashed them, as far as I remember. But
they were still around. It's not like...
Oh, yeah.
Like, they just became a subsidiary.
That's right.
Of Rome. Like, yeah. they definitely...
A subsidiary.
They became a franchise. A Roman franchise for a long time. But, I mean, they lasted... Even if you're going with the conservative traditional estimate... They lasted almost, 2,000 years.
I guess.
That's an enormously long time.
Well, you could look at, other countries and say, like the Chinese, for example.
Well, actually, wait.
The Chinese have been an independent state for 2,000 years now.
The Chinese haven't even been an independent state. They're just a civilization.
Well, that's what I mean.
China is the best example. Absolutely, China is the best example. Because it's been going strong, tickety-boo, since...
Yeah.
Forever.
Oh, fuck yeah. Since the first emperor.
Well,
right?
Since the Han Dynasty.
That's right.
Right? Because the majority of people living in China would identify themselves as Han Chinese.
Yes, absolutely.
And so, yeah, that's crazy. That's an incredibly long-standing empire. It also has a lot to... It goes a long way, I think, to explain some of the cultural differences between... North America, like Western civilization.
Do you mean like what kind of differences between like? That's the other thing is you could look at like the civilization, like world civilization, into two giant splines, right? The East and the West.
Yeah, I don't even want to think of it that way. Just in terms of they have just very different cultural norms. Cultural expectations and traditions and so forth. And as a result, there are aspects of Chinese, like the way that, the Chinese government even today does things.
Well, this is actually...
Are very counterintuitive or...
To us, because we're...
To a North American.
We're actually individualists, right? And modern... psychology would label people in the East not as individualists, but as... what the hell is
collectivists.
Collectivists, yeah, that's right. And it's it's kind of like the idea that your independence is very insignificant, and the strength of the group is what is really important.
Absolutely, but it goes even deeper than that, because you know, you remember back in whenever it was 96 or something, when
Hong Kong closed.
Hong Kong,
yeah, it was in 96.
Turned back over to the Chinese. People were predicting like, oh, like Hong Kong is going to close for business. It's going to be completely different. And then here we are, like almost 20 years later.
It's pretty much the same, except the media's got to keep its yap a little more.
Yeah.
Well, I think people in Hong Kong might be very angry with us for saying that, but
it's fairly free.
Yeah.
Like it's China.
It's nowhere near as fucked up as everybody predicts.
Yeah,
I remember in 96 when it, you know, I was a university student back then, and I remember it closing, and I remember the university I was going to in 97. I all of a sudden had a shitload of fucking Chinese students come in.
Yeah. Well, and so if you
that were recently minted Canadian citizens, right?
Well, and so if it was as simple as, you know, the Chinese are collectivists, you would expect that they would have, you know, for the greater good, maybe done something more along the lines of what we were expecting and closed Hong Kong for business.
Yeah.
But there are such nuances to their worldview as a civilization. They're still very much able to see the value of a city like Hong Kong that can, you know, kind of act independently in a capitalist marketplace and, you know, trade on behalf of China in a lot of ways.
Yeah. That's, well...
And to create a certain amount of private wealth.
Yeah, that's the kind of anti-collectivist ideal right there is that... Well, not necessarily that one person is getting more wealthy than the other, but the idea is that everybody's supposed to get wealthy under the communist model anyway, right? And that's clearly not happening.
Yeah, and
but
it's
they,
well,
but
and I
to
think
be
it
fair,
goes back to the fact that China isn't really a communist country.
Recently
it is.
But you think maybe that's just how they're expressing their collectivism?
But they have thousands of years of history as something completely different.
Yeah.
You know, they're not, they haven't been communists for thousands of years.
Oh God. Well,
right.
They just said it's
this is a blink of an eye.
In their history, it's only been 60 years since they've been communists. Right?
So to them, it's nothing. To them, they're much more Chinese than they are communists. And so there's something in that sort of worldview that allows them to have this very complex, nuanced, approach to, you know, the way that they kind of approach the world around them that North Americans completely lack, because we have no civilization, we have little or no culture. I mean, even if you're from the oldest honky civilization,
yeah,
you know, your people
honky civilization. Well, that's the thing is like
your people are, you know, hundreds of years old culturally.
And I've heard this shit before. I remember mentioning, somebody asked me where I was from once in Japan once. And I said I was from Canada, and they were like, oh, a new country, right? And I'm like, well, yeah, we're only 130 something. You know, we're new as shit, right?
Yeah.
And he goes, where's your family from, really? And I'm like, oh, well, ethnically, I'm English.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, yeah, young country. And I was like... But because, well, the Japanese talk about an era, the Heian period, which is like 1,000 years in the past, and they talk about it like it was last week.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, chicks in the Heian period, they were hot, man. Their fashion was really cool. And it's like, holy
fucking shit!
That's like an ancient civilization, but it's not. It's you. It's you guys. It's like, and for them, it's like, no, that's us. We did that. That's our thing.
Exactly.
You can go down to the museum and see some artifacts if you want.
Yeah, they have a sort of nationalistic pride that's completely independent of their country, per se, but extends back thousands of years in the past.
That's right.
Which is crazy to think about.
I've always been really, to some degree, envious of my wife and my kids for being able to look toward this ancient, rich culture and we're a part of that. And I was like, well, I've been there.
Yeah.
It's not a part of, you know what I mean?
A Kemasar conquered one of the women. Dragged her back to my cave.
I guess that is part of the there is this kind of inner sort of conflict when you're Western European, Caucasian, and living in the New World, where you don't feel like you have much of a culture. Because if I look toward England for, you know, for some sort of, you know, comfort from my home civilization, so to speak, those guys would be like,
well,
not only that, but like, if I were to go to England, be like, I'm, you know, my family's back from England, and we're, you know, they'd be like, fuck off back home to Canada.
What?
What?
You're not fucking English.
Fuck you.
Motherfucker.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? Like, you're kind of fucked in the middle.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You're like a...
You're Tarzan.
Tarzan not from jungle. Tarzan not fit in city. Where Tarzan live? Tarzan feels sad.
Oh, and Tarzan goes to Japan and feels tall.
Tarzan go to Japan.
But...
Tarzan feel culture shock.
Civilization... per se... Yeah... I think it's something that we need to work on badly as a civilization. This is the first time where we've been able to communicate globally as one world civilization.
Yeah. I think that's actually kind of where I was going to go, to say that I think as globalization continues,
yeah,
we're going to start seeing things less as, oh, I'm English or I'm whatever. It's just going to be kind of like, oh, I'm human, and look at all these interesting things humans have done. Like, our next-door neighbors here did this, and our next-door neighbors here did this. And, well, to be honest, you know, my people just kind of moved here and killed all the natives and then took their land.
My people didn't even do anything in, that's horrible. But my... people didn't even do that. My people lived in England for hundreds of years. I come from a long line of office staff. And then, literally, yeah, that was like job titles. Like most of the people in my family from the census in the 1700s up until the early 1900s that you can like go and look at online, which is awesome, by the way, if your family's from England. But anyway, yeah, so...
Clerk.
Seriously, clerk. All my great grandfathers, like 7 generations back. Clerk. It's all in the census.
How wonderful to come from a long line of clerks.
Prison clerks. Yeah. Long line of prison clerks.
Is that how you explain your stocky frame and your muscles?
Is that what happens when? What? You
come from a long line of
prison clerks?
Prison clerks. Yeah, you had to be like muscly and able to beat prisoners.
No, you had to
do the maths.
I don't think you had to beat up prisoners if you were a clerk. I think you just came in and did some bookwork and made sure that all the prisoners had food and that...
Bookwork is like when you beat the prisoners with a book, right?
I don't think so, no.
That's what they call it.
No, I think it's accounting.
Gotta work the book. Work the book on some prisoners' faces.
What were we talking about again?
Oh, fuck. You know what? It's time for Sell Me On It. It's time for the part of our show where each of the hosts and our guest, if we have one, which we don't today, will take a little bit of time and talk to our listeners about something that we care deeply about and try to convince you to care deeply about it, too. Jeff,
what
have you got?
I have got Kickstarter.com.
Kickstarter.com.
Like I said earlier on in the show, I've kind of found this cool thing where it puts customers right into the laps of the producers or the manufacturers of said product or art. In this case, I have bought a woodblock print, a Japanese woodblock print made by... an American who does Japanese woodblock printing in Japan.
Another Japanophile.
Oh, this guy makes me look like a super noob.
Oh, really?
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, yeah, this guy's the real deal. Like,
I thought you were the real deal. Well, you've been passing yourself off as the real deal.
You can go...
You were extended an invitation
to
be a guest on the spoiler show hold on. Under the auspices of being the real deal.
Or friends you know who spent a year or two there, you can tell them, no, you're not the real deal. Jeff is. But... when you look at Jeff and you go talk to this guy who's this woodblock printer in Japan and he's like 6 years? Oh, that's nothing. I've been here 35.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, the old guy.
The old motherfucker.
Yeah, the old guy. has been there forever.
Yeah, and what he does is woodblock prints. And what I've done is an American artist has done these ukiyo-e style pictures, which is Japanese art from the ukiyo period, I think is what you would call it in English anyway. That's what they say in Japanese. I might be wrong in English. They might be using different words. Anyway.
Yeah, well, it's just like, it's like kind of like industrial era, Meiji era sort of.
Yeah, late Tokugawa, early Meiji stuff.
Right? Yeah, it's like, it's basically the pulp art, the pop art of Japanese culture circa 1800s.
Right. Even a little earlier than that.
Yeah. Well, and some continued even later. You know, like it's the...
Well, some of it's continuing even now, so...
Yeah.
It's still, like it still branches out. Anyway, what it is it's these woodblock prints of Nintendo characters done up in ukiyo style.
Yeah.
And they look friggin' killer. So for $130, I got a handmade first printing, like not printing like from a print press, but hand woodblock, like hand printed...
Yeah.
Using wood blocks for $135.
Yeah.
That's impossible to find hand, you know, hand printed Japanese anything for $130. My wife, it was actually her idea. She's like, it's only $135. And I'm like, that's expensive. And she's like, no, my dumb honky. That's cheap. Yeah. Buy one of those. And I did, and I bought it. And the reason
Which one did you get?
Rickshaw Chase.
Oh, nice. Which the Mario Kart.
Well, my wife chose it. She's a huge Mario fan. So when she was a kid, that's like that was her game back on the Famicom. See? Anyway, so we got that, and literally, I think they had several thousand orders, and this artist and this woodblock printer basically got, you know, because like they had a really great idea. They're both talented artists and mm-hmm. can ply their trade and their craft as well as anybody else.
Well, yeah, they got
like they're world class. And instead of having to, you know, pitch their idea, worry about a lawsuit from Nintendo. So, oh, this company's not going to print or produce our idea. So now we got to do this. Now we got to do that. They just went into business on their own. They went to Kickstarter.com, which basically you just put your idea up. Throw a dollar amount down, and if enough people think it's a cool idea and you get the money that you need donated to you to start off your project, you start off your project.
Game on, yeah.
So these guys pulled down like over $250,000 in under a month.
Yeah.
And I think one of them had a job that he fucking hated and wanted to get out of, and then the other one was about to go, the guy living in Japan, he was about to go tits up. Like his company was about to go bankrupt. Yeah. And this pulled him right out of the red, straight into the black. It's enough money for him to start producing all sorts of new art and actually expand his business.
Yeah.
And all done by avoiding the douchey corporations in the middle.
Yeah. It's pretty... The internet is amazing for its ability to, like, genuinely democratize content.
In that regard, yeah. Because art is something that I necessarily wouldn't even buy, especially for the price tag that it's available for. Oh, and in this case, I didn't even, like... Once my wife told me that it was a good... Because I didn't know. But as soon as I found out it was a good deal, I gobbled one up in a second.
Yeah. I actually bought into that Kickstarter as well. Because it's amazing. I chose a slightly different option.
What'd you get?
I got 5 regular Giclée prints.
Oh, yeah. That's
so
cool.
I got 5 of like the normal prints. So they're a little bit bigger.
They're like poster size, aren't they?
They're not quite poster size. But they're bigger. And I got 5 of them. So I'll be able to like set them up as kind
I guess mine kind of becomes a double sell you on it. But essentially I'm trying to sell Kickstarter.com here because if you browse there and take a look,
there's a lot of really cool projects.
Holy shit. Some of them are fantastic. There's a very couple others that I've like just donated money to, like just 10 bucks, 20 bucks, because I'm like, you know, there's no benefit in it for me other than this guy might do something really cool down the road.
That would be a really cool project to see.
Yeah. Like some of it's music as well. Some of the stuff I've thrown money at. And it's great. There's a lot of artists.
Yeah, Kickstarter is a really cool idea.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, my sell me on it for this week is the Edmonton Humane Society. I've been following them on Instagram. And, I mean, first of all, don't follow them on Instagram if you don't follow a lot of people, because they absolutely will blow up your feed. Like, I think I get 10 or 15 pictures a day of incredibly cute cats and dogs posted from the Edmonton Humane Society. But they have an enormous number of extremely cute cats and dogs all the time, of all ages. They've got a lot of kittens, less puppies, but they've got a lot of puppies still. and some older dogs and stuff, rescue animals. A few weeks ago, they brought a whole bunch of dog-fighting pit bulls that they had rescued from the States.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so, like, they're like, rescuing these, like...
You want to hear a story?
Totally fucked up, sad case dogs from the States. Sure, let's hear the story.
My cat's from the Humane Society.
Yeah.
Yeah. That place is fantastic. Have you actually been in the building?
No, I haven't.
It's amazing.
So what I've been told is that it's a no-kill shelter.
That's right. Nothing dies in there. Yeah. Nothing eats shit. It all gets to live.
Yeah. So I was told that by someone I trust, and then someone I don't really trust told me that it is a kill shelter, and I'm going to ignore her, but...
As far as I know, the last time I was in there was 2 years ago when I got my cat.
Yeah.
And I asked them, I'm like, are any of these animals dying? And they're like, no, we don't kill any of them.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
That was my understanding.
Like, this isn't the, they were like, this isn't the dog pound. We don't kill them here. We find homes, like, I think the lady even said, we find homes for everyone. Not like all of them, but everyone, as though they're little people. So
yeah, no,
they're pretty serious about it.
The most beautiful girl in the world told me that it was a no-kill shelter. So I'm inclined to just believe her.
That's what I normally do. Who said that?
My Korean friend.
The most beautiful girl in the world. Korean friend?
My Korean friend. The most beautiful girl in the world.
I gotta say, she's pretty pretty.
She is pretty pretty. pretty. Anyway. But yeah, the Edmonton Humane Society is an amazing place to get a pet. Like, if you're in the market for a cat or a dog, I don't understand why people would go to the pet store or would go to a breeder, because, you know, it's like has been often said in so many documentaries, you vote with your money. You vote with where you spend your money and what you spend that money on.
Right.
And so if you're going to a pet store and buying a dog from the pet store, you're voting for more dogs to be produced and sent to this pet store from whatever weird breeder they come from.
Yeah.
But, you know, also a lot of the time, those dogs get poorly treated and end up at the Humane Society anyways.
Well, they're just...
So yeah. you've got this opportunity to help, to help an animal that's in dire straits in some way, shape, or form, and is in need of human companionship, at least by our definition of what dogs and cats are for. The Humane Society, you know, does everything for you. So every cat or dog you get is spayed or neutered. They'll handle all the shots and so forth when you purchase the cat or dog. First of all, the cost of purchasing a cat or dog from the Humane Society is extremely inexpensive.
You just make a donation. I think with all the shots and all the paperwork and everything, when all was said and done...
Daddy?
Yes, sweetie?
Come on, Pop.
Okay, I'm not an air conditioner pumpkin, but I love you.
One big hole.
Bridge is right over there, son. Just kidding. I don't know.
Open a window.
Don't do that. That's really cold out. Anyway, hold on. Cute. Can you go see Mommy?
What?
I love you.
Mommy has chocolate milk.
I know.
Chocolate milk. Oh. Recording in Turner Station.
Sorry.
Full
anyway.
Of excitement. But yeah, the cost is less. I mean, I know with a... I know that with a dog, the cost is, you know, a few hundred dollars still. And I believe with a cat, unless they have kind of a special deal going on, it's still somewhat expensive.
At a pet shop?
At the SPCA.
Oh, I don't think the SPCA exists anymore. I think the SPCA got gobbled up by the Humane Society.
Yeah. I use them interchangeably.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
No, that's not expensive. My cat was like $100 and some change.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah, it was cheap as hell. It was nothing compared to what you pay
a breeder.
Oh God, yeah. Like you paid, you know, hundreds to thousands to a breeder.
Yeah, and it's still, I think, for a dog, especially for a puppy, for the really young ones, for the super cute ones, it's still hundreds of dollars. But, you know, they come with all the shots. You're doing a good thing. You're helping an animal that has been abandoned or has been rescued from some horrible, heinous circumstance, like the dog-fighting pit bulls that I mentioned before. I think they've got a whole bunch of chihuahuas that they often pull down from California.
Yeah, there's a bunch of different projects they have where they're they literally fly dogs in on donations. Like some rich animal lover will like find out about how there's a group of animals. There's like some, you know, puppy sweat house or what are they called?
Puppy mill.
Puppy mill. Right.
Yeah.
There'll be some puppy mill that gets busted up, and because the Edmonton Humane Society has some of the best facilities ever for any humane society, they have a full-time vet.
Yeah.
And they ship them on up here, and we end up taking care of them and finding homes.
Well, and you know, as far as the finding homes portion of that bargain is concerned, the Humane Society does an amazing job of, you know, vetting all of the potential owners of these or adopters of these animals. You know, they make sure that the animal is going to be going into a home where it's going to be cared for. They make sure that the people who are going to be adopting the animal are going to be willing and able and capable of caring for it sufficiently. You know, they have like a fairly in-depth interview process, which you would of course not have if you're trying to just, you know, buy a dog from the pet store.
And it ends with a test. There's actually a written test you have to take.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a significant amount of care that gets taken into the adoption of the animals that come from the Humane Society. And in my experience, the animals that have been that I've been introduced to that have come from the Humane Society have been just absolutely amazing.
My cat included.
Yeah, your cat.
He does try to fuck
Captain
for everything.
Sergeant Lieutenant Stoopies.
I think I'm just going to punt him out of the military. He's just going to be Stoopies, and that'll be it.
He can just be Stoopies forever.
No military rank.
Maybe his official name could be Stoopies forever.
Maybe what I could do is I could just give him a new nickname that sounds more badass,
like,
and start him off at private. And every time he does something ridiculous, promote him. Yeah. So the next time he knocks over a whole bunch of food, or the next time he, you know, like barfs some fucking tape he ate all over the floor.
Yeah.
Way to go, Corporal.
Corporal. way to go, Private First Class.
That's right. You're doing it.
Well done.
Better.
So that's my sell me on it is, you know, if you're in the market for a new pet, especially a cat or a dog, I would really strongly recommend that you go to the Edmonton Humane Society, if you live in the Edmonton area, obviously, and check it out. And if you don't live in the Edmonton area, I would still recommend that you go to your local SPCA or Humane Society or animal shelter and check out the dogs or cats that they have available for adoption there, because it's a real shame that so many, you know, domestic animals end up getting euthanized unnecessarily just because some person, you know, purchased them or had their own dog not neutered or spayed and popped out a whole bunch of puppies and kittens, and there was no home for those puppies or kittens. So I just feel like it prevents a whole lot of kind of general universal bummerness.
Yeah, I think you are correct. And also, having been somebody who got their animal from there, I would definitely agree with Marcus's sell me on it. That's a great idea if you're in the market for a pet.
Yeah.
You
certainly need to have done your research and figured out that this is actually what you want to do, because it's not something that you go into lightly. It's not something that you just have for a couple of years. It's something that you have until that pet dies. And that can be a very long time. So,
right.
And it should be.
And if you buy it for your girlfriend,
she should probably know about it first,
because that doesn't mean you get to date her for 15 more years.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
That means nothing.
All right, friends. Well, thank you for listening. Special end of spoiler show supplemental plug. I'm doing Movember this year. Come look at my Movember page. I believe it's www.mobro.co/Marcus Cunningham, all one word. And if you're so inclined, because of course none of you have ever donated a single penny to the spoiler show, and I continue to pay a monthly fee for the hosting of our podcast.
How much is that?
It's like $8 a month. It's not that bad.
Okay, I'll buy you a beer next time at the spoiler show.
But if you're interested in having a tax-deductible type of donation to a worthy cause, unlike the spoiler show, please consider a donation to me and my mustache. All the money that I raise goes to men's health initiatives such as prostate and testicular cancer research, as well as men's mental health issue research. And as always, you can find me on Twitter at Marcus Deca and on Instagram at Marcus Deca.
There you go.
Jeffrey, have you a thing to plug? Do you want Twitter followers?
No, I don't want
Twitter followers. Stay away from Jeff on Twitter, you bastards.
But anybody who follows me, I think I have 16 followers.
Whew.
And I think
that's like the spoiler show.
And if you eliminate like anybody who's related to me, I think I have 9 followers.
So, and if you eliminate the porn spam bots,
then Craig Sherburn, and that's it.
Craig Sherburn, second shout out of the night.
Woo!
Woo! And of course, if you want to follow Craig Sherburn on
which
on
you Twitter, totally should, by the way.
Follow at Comedy by Craig. There you go, Craig. There's a free one. Thanks for listening, kids. This one was a bit long, but I think it was fun.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
I'm Commander Shepard, and The Spoiler Show is my favorite podcast on the Citadel.